Kia ora, we're kindly joined by Dr. Amanda Yates, and she works with councils and iwi and communities. She's a senior lecturer at Auckland University of Technology. And today we're talking about a radical rethink of our cities would improve urban well-being. Now, our country could lead the world by developing a first-ever Modi Ora, or All of Life Urban Wellbeing Data Tool and Framework. And that's from the latest findings from Building Better Homes, Towns and Cities, ko ngā wā kāinga he whakamā horahora, as part of the National Science Challenge. Amanda is with us today to talk about some of these interesting possibilities that could interweave Māori thinking and concepts into the way we develop our urban communities going forward. Thanks for joining us on the show today, Amanda. Tēnā koe.
Oh, tēnā koe. Kia ora. Thank you for that.
Nice to talk with you, Amanda. Firstly, your interest in this sort of area, where does that stem from?
Well, it's just a long-running interest, really. You know, my whānau has a real connection to the environment and concerns about well-being in lots of different ways. So it's a lifelong focus. But it also has been my focus as an architect and then as an academic. So that's my primary sort of research focus is around well-being and how we can change our urban practices, particularly in an era of climate emergency. Yeah.
I'm intrigued by the idea too because of our massive shift into urban environments as a people, a stunning 80% of our people within a decade of calling urban centres home, but they really weren't designed to accommodate us, to be honest, and we've had to sort of fit in to our Pākehā framework. So I'm intrigued that you have an architectural background and somewhat disappointed that our taha Māori is not reflected in cityscapes and architecture, and hope that that can be, you know, changed a little going forward as we design new places to call home. Makes an absolute sense to me, and hopefully to those listening today too, to factor in some of this taha Māori into our thinking. The science challenge that is the basis of this sort of think tank. Can you tell us how they were looking at, you know, a Māori side to living in better urban environments?
Yes, so well, the Building Better Homes, Towns and Cities, is really, which is one of the National Science Challenges, is really focused on te ao Māori, on how whakaaro Māori can help to achieve the urban transformation, which is one of the key goals that they're looking for. And, you know, in a climate emergency as we are in, but also in terms of the various social crises around access to housing and loneliness and obesity epidemics, there's an indication there that these issues are so significant that we really need a major cultural transformation. And this is where Te Ao Māori has such potential to shift the way urbanism is currently framed. And so it's, you know, it's a technological problem, but really also it's a cultural problem. It's a shift that's required in our understanding of how we are in the world. And that's the beauty of concepts like Modi and Modi Ora, is it really recognises that humans are inherently connected to the planet. You know, we're part of the planet. And we need to be thinking about the Māori of, you know, Papatūānuku, of the land around us, of the sky, of the rivers, and of the urban fabric, as well as the Māori, the well-being of people. And if we can do that in relation to the way we design our cities, then we can make much better cities for everyone, actually. So that's the opportunity and the challenge, really.
We are seeing some interesting work in Papakāinga development. It's also interesting that you touch on aspects of loneliness, of obesity. These are issues that you can be in a very busy city environment but still feel lonely and disconnected. I wonder, Amanda, whether there's more likelihood of invoking some of what we're talking about here into future city design rather than trying to adapt what we currently have. Is it going to be more difficult to change what we've got than to plan for the future?
Yes, I mean, I think that's right. It's a two-phase thing, really. We do have to really radically rethink how we design our cities and how we house people particularly. And you're exactly right that the papakāinga, which is a sort of ancient practice, is such a powerful practice going forward. That could be the future of our cities, that, you know, we cluster people together much more closely so that you've got that social connection and you're able to walk to work and, you know, walk to the your various sort of activities so that you're addressing that obesity issue too. But we do also need to adapt our cities, you know, because we've got this framework in place now and there's no other solution but to look at how we can densify and increase the sort of walkability of our cities, increase the green and blue infrastructure in our cities, you know, the native habitat and access to rivers and wetlands, because the research around the impact on individual well-being from access to nature is really powerful. It makes us happier and healthier, and it helps improve our sort of ability to focus. It's a very powerful thing, and that's what we should be building into our cities as well. So our cities become sort of ecological urban sites, or they become a kind of landscape urbanism. The research is very clear on it. It's just how do we start to make these changes in our cities? That's the question.
Are there any examples of a Māori community well thought out, well designed, that gives, allows us to be in touch with the things we value, the way, the green space, you know, that have these Māori concepts interwoven? I say that because I'm constantly looking at Flatbush going out on a rate of knots, GI, shoebox-styled houses, functional, yes, but I'm not sure that they're factored in the community needs or the environmental or the Māori of those who are living in them. Maybe Takanini is an example. We've got planned developments in Drury and Pukekohe, and many tens of thousands of homes are planned. But whether these aspects of what you're talking to us today about, Amanda, are being considered in that planning stage?
Well, that's such an insightful thing to say, and it is really, when you look at it from the point of view of planners, they really can only work with the tools that they have, which are the sort of structured planning frameworks. And because of the way we have been operating in terms of our cities, we have sort of siloed things. We haven't recognised the importance of a sort of all of life or ecological well-being for our cities. And so we don't really have planning frameworks that allow planners to think holistically like that. And so this is the power of talking about how, you know, Māori thinking, a sort of holistic approach, an approach which looks at Māori order, can help you change your planning decisions so that, yes, the minute you're proposing to put housing in an area of really precious agricultural land, you immediately have a framework that allows you to question that. Or if you're putting people in sort of isolation where they've got to drive everywhere, you know, you have a framework which allows you to question that. So that's the power of Māori order as a sort of urban framework. You come back to asking, where's the well-being here? Are you increasing the Māori or are you reducing the Māori? You know?
I guess, sadly, in these construction and development concepts, most are profit-driven rather than people-driven. And so I guess I'm hoping one day that we have a distinctly Māori housing development that might weave these concepts into design and eventual construction. Are there any examples of that, or are we still awaiting what might be a larger papakāinga sort of setting? Is it to? I mean, is this where we need to be heading, so that we are Māori, we design for ourselves initially, and that way the suburbs or the communities that we build will be reflective of what we value.
That's it. I think that's key, is that, and, you know, we can provide leadership through building those exemplars. You know, they become sort of prototypes or case studies. And we can lead change, and we should lead change, because, you know, this is ancient knowledge about our interconnection with the planet, and it's needed now in this time of all sorts of, you know, ecological and social crisis, and the evidence is really clear about that we do need to make a change. So there are a number of small case studies, and there's work going on in this space, and I think it's just a matter of time before some larger case studies or examples are built. And they will be really helpful in leading the larger sort of cultural change that needs to happen. Yeah.
Well, we know that Tainui, for instance, are considering a residential development. Perhaps some of this thinking can be interwoven there. Spoke with John Tamia earlier today too, Amanda, and there's plans for construction of homes and units for our elderly people in Waterview, I think he was suggesting. So it would be sensible for us to look very carefully at how we can put more of ourselves into the design and therefore utilise space even better. You're a big fan of individual households generating their own power. I mean, even that makes a hell of a lot of sense going forward, doesn't it?
Well, it does, you know, and when you look at the city from a wellbeing framework, you need to think, what are the sort of very most critical threats to wellbeing, and how can you turn them around most quickly? And, you know, the power system that we have at the moment is a sort of relatively high carbon, particularly in terms of how we power our vehicles. It's, you know, 99% fossil fuels in New Zealand. And so the really really vital need there is to transition those vehicles very quickly to a low emissions kind of fuel source. And if we look at a model where homes become a sort of part of the city infrastructure, you know, it's small scale change, each sort of many of the homes having rooftop solar on them, it's a relatively small scale, but spread across the city, it actually changes the whole nature of the urban energy system. And, you know, small scale change is proven to be easier to manifest than sort of big, large scale change. And it also gives citizens a capacity to sort of, you know, be involved in this transition process. And if you can use some of the more innovative wellbeing-led cost analysis tools that are coming out now, or sort of total value analysis tools, which look at not just the economic case but also the ecological case, the human wellbeing case, then you can start to argue for the cost of that transition. Yeah.
I find the area really fascinating and deserves a heck of a lot more corridor and consideration, but thanks for championing the need for us to be better connected with our natural environment, at the same time not compromising on the style, design and functionality of the houses that we need in the future. It's a fascinating area to talk of, and I thank you for sharing some of your time with us today, Amanda. It's been nice speaking of this stuff with you. Kia ora.
Oh, kia ora, kia ora.
Thanks so much. Kia ora, thank you. Dr. Amanda Yates with us from AUT University, and Amanda's profile. She's a very accomplished author as well.